No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world, and today I'm here with, I guess, our first overseas hip-hop sensation.
Really?
I mean, I guess. I got a Korean DJ named Cam Girl, but besides her.
What about Rich Brian?
Rich Brian, never actually did an interview with him.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Very unfortunate, because that would have been good, actually, if I got that, like, right as he first started coming to America and stuff. You feel like you've seen him break things open for the Asian hip-hop community?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. He's very different than me. But and he's strictly Indonesian.
Right.
So, but I was born in the U.S., so it's a little bit different. You know, he actually came from Indonesia. I was born here, went to Korea, and then got established, and I came back.
So. Right. So he started making music, somehow sounded like weirdly authentically American.
Very.
And then just came out here and proceeded to kill it.
And I think he learned English through YouTube or some shit like that.
Yeah. Really? So what was your story? You were coming from Seattle.
Yeah.
But then how did you end up like figuring out? So did the musical talent and the music itself come before you actually went out to Asia, or how did this work?
Yeah, I mean, I always listened to hip hop and R&B as like a young child. And so I was always listening to it and reciting raps and singing along to songs and stuff like that. But it was just like for fun. I never thought of becoming like a singer or a rapper. And then I was really into dancing. I would do MJ moonwalks and crotch grabs.
Break dancing and stuff, or just dance in general?
And then I started breakdancing. I started b-boying in high school. And then I joined a crew, Art of Movement. And and then so like my grades were not good. I was skipping school and my grades were not good. And of course, Asian parents definitely want you to go to a good college, good university, be a doctor or lawyer.
Right.
Obviously, that wasn't happening.
That wasn't happening.
No, it was not.
Would you say you were the bad seed of the family?
No, I was not a bad seed.
By their standards?
No, because I was a good kid, but I just skipped school. Mm. I skipped school and I didn't do my homework. Like, I think I got like a 1.2 GPA or something like that.
If you were a white American, they would have like really appreciated your interest in dancing, and they would have like put you in dance classes and shit like that. Instead, like, because I know a lot of Asian people who like deal with the family thing, and it's crazy how strict it is.
I was like, I don't want to go to college. I got slapped in the face. I was like, bam. I was like, oh no. But that's a true story. But yeah, and then she's like, there was an audition they were having for this this boy band. And so my mom was like, she saw it in the newspaper. She's like, okay, my son dances. I think he raps. I'm going to, tell him to do this.
And this was when you were what age?
It was like 17.
Okay. And so what was your knowledge as a person who only knew America of what it would be like to be in a Korean boy band?
I had no knowledge at all. I didn't know any Korean boy bands back then. I didn't listen to Korean music back then.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't even know it was an audition. I thought it was like a contest where you win first prize and then you get money and that's it.
American Idol type thing.
Yeah. I didn't know. It was like, okay, I'm auditioning to be a trainee, artist development, to be in a boy band. I didn't know that. No.
Really?
Yeah.
Would your decision have been different if you knew?
If I would have knew everything beforehand, it might have been. But at that time, my family was struggling a little bit. You know, we were kind of, well off when I was younger. And then as I got older, we were kind of struggling a little bit. And so, from a financial standpoint, I'm like, okay. And the dude was like, yo, a lot of our artists, they make millions of dollars. I was like, okay, I'll try to put it together in my head. I got to support my family. Maybe I'll go there for my future. My mom said it's going to be good for my future.
Right.
All right. And so.
So you moved out to Korea because of this boy band.
Yes.
And then you guys start doing stuff together, but like how this must have been insane, like cultural shock-wise, right?
Of course. I mean, because I grew up in the States, so I couldn't speak the language very well.
Mm-hmm.
Was not familiar with the culture, and didn't really even eat Korean food like that. I didn't even eat kimchi.
Really?
I love it now. Yeah. I love it now, absolutely.
I didn't know nothing about Korean food until I moved to LA, so
back
in New York, I had no clue.
Okay, Yeah, I mean, everything was a complete shock. I was always used to just, b-boying and dancing and rapping for fun with the homies. Now it's kind of like, they're like, yo, you got to be here at 8 a.m. and you got to, train for 12 hours. You got to take this lesson and this lesson and this lesson. If you don't do this a certain way, you get scolded or you get,
right.
disciplined or whatever. So.
And so, but did you feel like you fell in line relatively quickly? Or
No, I was very rebellious. I was like, because I didn't understand, you know, they're like, you know, you got to turn in your cell phones. I'm like, why you got to turn your cell phones? That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, right. why? So I was the only dude that didn't turn in my cell phone. I was like, if this is how it's going to be, I'm just going to quit.
There's so many little cultural things that you probably had such a hard time figuring out. Right?
Yeah. And some of them were justified. Some of them were just because I was like a young little ignorant kid. Right. You know, so
when you join a boy band like this, how long did it take for the success to start coming in?
I mean, so I was a trainee for about 4 years. Oh, and then I was just in the group for a year. And at the end of the year, it was just 1 year. Literally, it was from like September to the next September. But we were probably one of the biggest. Yeah.
But you were a trainee, as in, like, there's a whole system for how this stuff unfolds, basically. Yeah. And they, like, basically had you, like, work on your skills. When you actually come out, though, is it the kind of thing where your success is almost, like, insured because the machine is so big?
Yeah, definitely. Right. And especially at that time, right now, there's, you know, hundreds of boy groups. But at that time, there was only, like, five.
Right.
Or some shit like that, right? So.
Was there ever, so how was that journey though? Like, were you really feeling that success? Was it an insane experience?
Yeah. I mean, it was, but I always, because my goal was never to be successful or to be famous. So I was thankful for it, but it never like got to my head like, oh shit, I'm famous. Like I made it, like,
right.
Don't even talk to me. Like, not none of that. Like I always just felt regular.
And the schedule must be so demanding.
It was. That shit was, the schedule was crazy because there'd be times where, you know, we end at like 5 a.m. in the morning, like shooting some stuff. And then I'd have to go home and just wash up and then go do hair and makeup again and just not even sleep and go shoot some other TV show until like the night.
And it's no sympathy because you're just straight up there to work.
Yeah, basically. It's like yo, like they give you all these schedules and it's like you just gotta do it. If you complain, you're like ungrateful.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, was the music something you had any kind of control over, or was it the kind of thing where they're calling all the shots on
that? Well, I mean, because, you know, you gotta think of it like this, like we're not there as artists, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're there as...
They think of it completely differently.
Yeah, it's like we're just a piece of the puzzle that, you know, we're kind of... they're putting together all the pieces and we just are the... You know, kind of, I don't want to say puppets, but just, you know.
I mean, you really have to kind of understand the difference between like the way Americans view their lives and the way that people in Asia do, where in Asia it's way more about the collective. It's about taking care of the whole. Whereas in America, everybody wants to believe that Taylor Swift really wrote all these songs, performed them. You know, Beyonce wrote every word. She wrote the choreography for the dance, everything, you know. And it's like in Asia, it seems like people have much more of like it's not about being like the star. It's about the whole.
Yeah, yeah. The groups are definitely, you know, what's popping right now, for sure.
Definitely. So when did things start to go wrong?
I mean, after a year. So after, I mean, but it was, so basically it was something that I just kind of thought of as I had to do for my family. It was never like a passion or anything like that. And then, I mean, some people, after we were really popping, now we're popping. So now we have a target on our heads because we're popping. And so, what is it? Yeah, and then people dug up some old stuff that I said, you know, because when you first go to Korea, it's and me being from here is completely different, you know, it's such a culture shock, and so I'm trying to get adjusted. Like, people are kind of like looking at me wrong, kind of picking on me because I can't speak and I'm from America, and so I'm just like, yo, like, you know, and you know how when you're younger you just say just a bunch of shit. So I just said some ignorant shit on MySpace.
Said Korea was gay.
Yeah, basically.
Which is the kind of thing that a teenager
like
says.
How you talk when you're younger, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And you probably had no concept of the fact that you were going to become famous or that anybody would be paying attention to this.
And it wasn't like a, you know, like I didn't dislike all of Korea. It's just like my surroundings I'm in, I disliked. Mm. And that's how I expressed it. And so, but that got taken out of context, and it was just kind of like, yo, Jay Park doesn't like Koreans, he's racist against Koreans, and then just like disowned me basically and got kicked out the country basically.
It feels like that is the kind of thing that we think of as being an American thing, like dig up something that somebody said on the internet a long time ago and make a way bigger deal about it than it needs to be. And but is that like a common societal thing out there
for
as
sure.
Well,
yeah, definitely, you know, and over there it's much more, I want want to say harsh on just because anything like over here, you know, people they get locked up, they do crimes, they, you know, they assault people, they whatever it may be,
there's less real shit to pay attention to, right?
And they can come back and still, you know, make a living or on TV or whatever it may be. Over there is if you assault someone or you, I don't know, go to jail doing some crazy shit, then you're pretty much done.
Right.
Yeah. Unless you take like a 7-year break or some shit like that, but you're pretty much done.
So did you feel like it was that the fans really turned on you, or was it just that the label felt pressure from this thing that was going on online?
So the media really turned on me. The media really turned on me, and that, you know, how people are kind of, I guess, a little bit oblivious or naive when it comes to the media, because it's just kind of like they only just read the headlines and, okay, he said this. Oh my God. And so the overall consensus was like, yo, this guy is a racist against Koreans and he's just a bad dude. And so everybody just kind of like shunned me.
Yeah. And it probably wasn't even that big a deal for them to remove somebody from the group. Like out here, that would be such a big deal. But for them, they probably.
Well, you know, there are a lot of instances where, you know, people do get removed from the group. Like there's been a lot of cases like that for whatever reason may be. The reasons vary. But, you know, it's. Because if you have one person gone, you still have six, seven other people, you know? Right. So
how did you regroup after that as a person? And did you feel like it was completely devastating as a person?
Well, I was disappointed in myself. And I was apologetic to everybody that I let everybody down. Because, you know, I had a lot of people supporting me, a lot of people, like even my family, like, you know, kind of just supporting me and continuously like having a lot of expectations for me basically, and so I let everybody down, you know, I fucked it up basically, and so I was like, I had to go back to Seattle with like my head down, and I never, the funny thing is like I never cried, I never shed a tear during that time, because it's kind of like I didn't really care about, oh no, I'm not gonna be famous anymore, like, oh no, what am I gonna do, I'm not in the boy band, like that's just like, that's not important to me, you know. I'm not worried about being famous. It's like I let the people I care about down, that support me and shit. So I was like, yeah, I just felt bad.
Were the people who you were friends with in Seattle, did they understand what you had been doing for the past few years?
Well, so this is the funny. Like, of course, my parents were very devastated because, you know, their son is getting shunned by Korea. That's like, it's shameful. Feel me? Yeah. But the homies are like they don't really. They're not Korean, so they don't really know. So they're just like, "Oh, you got kicked out of Korea," like, you know, like kind of clowning and shit. Like, and so that's what, you know, keeps me very like grounded and humble. It's like, even though whatever I might be, the homies always treat me the same. You know,
right? So as all that was happening to you, though, were you thinking like, I have a second act inside of me, like I can recover from this?
Not at all. Not at all.
Really, that felt like the end of the road.
Well, I mean, because you know, everything happened so abruptly, and so it's not like, all right, I'm gonna come back, I'm gonna because I never even wanted to be a singer in the first place, so I'm just like, all right, I went back, I started working at a tire shop, like a used tire shop.
Wow, that must have been jarring for your brain to switch your life up so much, huh?
To be 100% honest, it was a relief.
Right,
I felt so comfortable being at home. Like, now I'm doing b-boy battles again, I'm working at a tire shop, life is simple. I don't have to worry about what I'm gonna say or, you know, what I'm gonna wear or whatever. Like, what are people gonna think if I say this? You know, I don't have to worry about all that shit. I just live my life, so I felt relieved.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it must just be so different because you're used to like, well, were you making a lot of money or were you
I made no money from being at the company.
None?
Yeah, not a cent, not a dollar.
Really?
Yeah. I was actually in debt $10,000.
So you're expected to just do all this because you're just part of this?
Well, so, you know, of course you have to recoup everything you received. So for the first couple of years, a lot of the groups, they recoup all the stuff that was, all the money that was invested in them. But I'm sure they made money after I left, after a couple of years or whatever. But when I was in the group, I didn't make any money now.
So then all of a sudden you're just in the tire shop getting your 10 bucks an hour or whatever, but at least you don't have the world's pressure on you at all times.
I was like, okay, cool. You know, life was simple.
Wear dirty ass outfit.
I get to see my family. I get to see my homies, do b-boy battles, do things I enjoy. You know.
When did you start to get your swagger back in terms of your confidence about being able to continue to be an artist and shit?
Or maybe be
an artist for the first time.
Yeah, for the artist for the first time. So that's when I started finding out about like kind of my passion and really making music. I started doing YouTube covers just because like the fans, you know, after I had departed from the group and left Korea, like the fans went crazy. That, you know, I had so much support, and they would send me like laptops and IMAX and shit. And so I'd just be like, yo, to show the fans that I'm okay. I wanted to show a side of me that's me, not that somebody else is making for me. But a side, like, this is what I'm into and what I'm like. So that's why I started doing covers. Like, I started writing little verses and doing little freestyles, and, you know, and then that shit just went viral. Like, I didn't even expect it to go viral. I thought it was going to get like 10,000-20,000 views. I think it got like 2 million in one day.
Really?
Yeah. And it was just a cover. And so that people were like, oh shit, there's still a lot of buzz around this guy. He's hot. And then that's when people started hitting me up. And yeah, and that's when kind of like my solo career started. It's like people started hitting me up, and then I just take it little by little. And
the people hitting you up, were they from Korea?
They're from everywhere. There's people from like the U.S. hitting me up, like lawyers and agents and whatnot. And people from Korea hitting me up, like, yo, like, you know, sign this. I did this movie that kind of like, I don't, you know, it just some shady shit happened, and it like just went on down like a weird path. But I did a movie. And so, yeah, there's a lot of that. From then on, it was like trial and error. And right. So everything I experienced, I learned from it. And then I, you know, became my own boss, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
So was that was important to you, though, is that you wanted to be able to like create your own music, that you wanted to be able to have some more control of your career?
That's the most important, because, you know, no amount of money or anything is worth, you know, giving up your freedom. You know what I'm saying? Because freedom is power, you know. And so it's like, I would never, you know, give up my freedom to say what I want to say, you know, work with who I want to work with, wear what I want to wear for any amount of money.
Right.
You know, so I knew the importance of that because I was in that situation. And so, yeah, from then on, I just started doing my shit, work with people I want to work with, and then, you know, good energy.
Would you say that it's just been like consistently good since you made your comeback as a solo artist, or has it been the kind of thing with a lot of ups and downs? Did you have to build up a lot? Would you feel like you were kind of starting from a very small base at that point?
Yeah. So it's funny because, yeah, I was popping, but, you know, in terms of me as a solo, like as a solo act, I had to kind of start over again. So I was famous, but I had no substance behind me, basically. And so when I would push it out, it would kind of get slept on. And I was whack at that time because that's when I first started.
Right.
Shit was garbage.
How many years ago was this?
This is like 9 years ago.
Nine. Holy shit. I didn't realize we were talking about this long of a road.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah. This is 9 years ago. This is 2010, 2009.
Right. So you had a lot of work to do in terms of your music itself.
Oh, for sure. And so that's when I didn't feel like I deserved all the love I was getting because I didn't put in no work. So that's when I really started putting in work. I started doing a lot of collabs. I started, you know, putting out a lot of music, doing, you know, this and that. And so, yeah, building, you know, started my own label 2013, one of the top hip hop labels right now is AOMG.
Yeah. So what did you have to accomplish in order to get yourself into the position where you could do your own label? And what was the goal for what you were going to do with that? I found that really interesting because that's kind of like you becoming the people who are sort of controlling your career before, even though I'm sure it's not at all the same.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you're going into the position of your previous oppressors in a way. You know, because that's what labels really are at the end of the
day. Yeah, well, not my label.
Not your label, but many labels.
I mean, everybody at our label made, I think, a few hundred thousand the first year.
Really?
Yeah, wow. First year. But anyways, yeah, so, you know, at first, they're like, oh, who's this boy band kid try to rap and do hip hop. Basically, okay. That was like the consensus. I was very like slept on. They're kind of like throwing shade at me, like, man, motherfucker, you're not hip hop, bro. But you know me, as like I've been living, breathing this shit ever since I was like, you know, second grade when I fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. So it just came very natural to me. So that's when I started doing a lot of collabs, putting out a lot of music, and then people kind of like, oh, okay, we see you, but your raps, because I can't speak Korean very well. Mm-hmm. So they're like, your raps are garbage. You can rap a little bit, but your lyrics are garbage. And so
that's gotta be so hard to rap in a language that you don't speak natively.
Definitely. But you know, just like that stubbornness in me, I wouldn't let anybody write for me. I just keep at it, and then. Yeah, and then, you know, I started gaining a little bit of respect, more weight, more clout, I guess you would say. And then I was like, yo, like, I want to start my own label. I want to have a collective of artists that we could, you know, that don't get enough shine. They can use, you know, this platform to kind of, you know, boom up. And also, I wanted to trade energies with people, trade ideas with people. It's kind of lonely doing music by yourself, being in the room with just the engineer, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, I wanted to, you know, I couldn't trust any labels anymore, basically. And so it's like, all right, we start from scratch with people I could trust, people I believe in. They believe in me. Let's do it. And so ever since then, it's been history. Yeah.
Has the goal been to focus on, like, rappers from Asia who are trying to cross over to America, though, since you know how to navigate that transition?
Yeah. So, I mean, at first, it was just, like, dope artists that I feel were dope. And most importantly, just good people. You know, that's very important to me. I don't care how talented you are. If you're not good people, it's like, I don't want you around me, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then, you know, I never even thought about making money off this label. I would have never thought in a million years it'd be this successful.
Right.
But that's why it's just God has a funny way of working things out. It's just like, if your motive and intent is pure, it just kind of like, it just, you know, and now we're like, what, 5 years later, we're like the biggest label out there, hip-hop label out there.
Yeah.
And I started another label, Higher Music, and that's where we're doing Asian artists and, you know, American artists under one roof. And so that collective and that just group of people in itself is kind of crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you feel like you were actually, like, canceled from Korea as a whole, and that then just slowly went away as your label started to become more established and stuff? Or just your solo career? Is that what broke it
open? Yeah, basically, yeah. I mean, you know, I was kind of blackballed. But, you know, just there's a few amount of people that supported me, that believed in me. So, and I just kept doing my thing. Like, you know, they're like, yo, you can't appear on this TV show. Cool. I'll just do YouTube. You know, I wasn't tripping. I wasn't like, oh, why don't they let me do this? And I was like, nah.
Is it still like that to a certain extent for you, or have they mostly forgot?
Well, it's mostly forgotten. And right now, it's kind of like I've established myself so much, and hip hop is so popping now. It's like, you can't leave me out.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't want to be like, you know, I'm like being all braggy, but I basically made it undeniable. Feel me? So it's kind of like I went against the grain and made it undeniable. And now it's like, you can't, if you talk about Asian hip hop, you can't. There's no way you can leave Jay Park out that conversation.
Right. Yeah. Because also, to a certain extent, I don't know if this is true in Korea, but I feel like people getting canceled for really stupid things has sort of slowed down, in the sense that people have, like, we've seen so much of this sort of, like, fake internet backlash to people that it's like the standard is higher for what needs to come out about somebody in order for people to be like, no, we got to get them out of here.
Yeah.
Do you think if that's the exact situation happened to you today? I mean, obviously, it would have been like, oh, look at this thing that he wrote 14 years ago on the internet or whatever. Yeah. But would it play out differently, probably?
Probably. Just because right now, since there are so many more groups and so many more celebrities, there's a lot of shit that happened, you know, with all these different people. So it's like, it wouldn't be that shocking. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you know, this guy did this last week, and this person did this last month, and you know, next week there might be some other shit that pops off.
We hear about new stuff all the time. Yeah.
So, but back then there wasn't that many people.
But
so,
do you feel like it's more lenient for you in general too? Because I feel like when you were just a Korean pop star, you wouldn't have been able to go on an American podcast and say shit and fuck, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, dude. Back then, nah, everything would have to be, you know, everything from hair placement to everything. Like, don't blink your eyes. Don't say this. Don't say that. So, no, I would never, ever in 100 years been able to come on this podcast.
Was that a weird thing to slowly get used to? Just, like, realizing, like, and that it's still like that all over Asia. Because there was some other Asian rapper that we were supposed to interview at some point, and then his label found out. They're like, no, we can't do it because there's people that smoke weed on that podcast. I'm like, we don't have to smoke weed while he's here.
Yeah, because you know why, though? Is because, you know, with when they build that image, you know, there's a lot of dollars behind it. You know, and if that image is broken, then they lose money. But for me, it's a little different because I'm not an image. I'm just me. You know, my music, whatever, every interview I'm in, whatever I say, every post I do, every Twitter post I do, the people around me, it's just me. So what you're liking about me is me. Right. So I don't have to be afraid of coming on No Jumper and interviewing with you or whatever, no matter, you know, what controversies you had before. You know, it doesn't really matter to me.
Fair point. Yeah. I never called Korea gay, but so I said a lot worse shit than that. You know, I never actually even been to Korea, but I've been in the airport like 3 times.
Like, going where?
Going to different places. I'm not even sure exactly where they were. Definitely one time was to China.
Okay.
And we had to stop in Korea in the airport. And actually, my friend Catfish, who's here, almost got in a fight in the airport. God, that is a weird story.
In Korea?
Yeah. Well, it was just like some drunk Swede who was on the plane and he was trying to start fights with people on the plane. There was like a really kind of like dorky Indian guy sitting in front of him. And this guy's antagonizing him the whole time, like pushing him, trying to start a fight with him.
God damn.
I almost jumped out of my seat and fought him on the plane. And Catfish had to restrain me.
Yeah, that's what an asshole move.
It was crazy because it was just like the cruelest, meanest thing. And I tweaked out because nobody else wanted to fight this guy on a plane.
On a plane, that's crazy.
Fighting on a plane is probably the worst idea you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
People
so
watching probably get anxiety.
Yeah. When did you start getting tattooed? Because that probably wasn't allowed either.
No, it's still not allowed. I mean, in terms of being on TV, it gets blurred out or I have to put bandages on it.
Wow.
Yeah. That's so you would not even, they would, you would just be blurred from neck down.
I was just in Japan and they wouldn't let me in the gym in the hotel.
Yeah. Some hotels, they don't let you in the gym.
And I found out Joe Rogan has the same problem when he goes there too.
Yep.
You have to wear like a long sleeve shirt and stuff. I got the whole throat and everything, so I don't even, there's no hiding it.
Yeah,
I could grow
my
beard out longer.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so.
Tattoos? I think 2011 was my first tattoo.
Okay.
And then ever since then, I just was like, yo, and then I just got my whole fucking chest and everything blasted.
I seen your 10-year transformation on Instagram. I was like, oh, shit. Like, a lot has changed.
A lot of shit. Like, no more abs and more tattoos.
No abs.
No, I fell off.
I mean, you still got abs compared to somebody like me, but
I fell off.
How much time you think you would need to get the abs back?
It's not about time. It's about the discipline. I'm not that disciplined anymore.
Yeah.
Like back then, I would get 2 hours of sleep and I'd be in the gym like, I gotta look good for these girls. But
really?
Yeah.
That was the motivation?
Of course, when you're younger, you see all these, celebrities, girl groups and stuff like that at the TV stations. Mm. Yeah, that's motivation. I want to stand out. I want to stick out.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people back then. They're like, yo, who's your dream guy? They're like, Jay Park. I was like.
Okay, but has that, like, because I feel like when you develop a fan base as a young person or when you're marketing to young people, that it can be kind of weird because a lot of times when you're 16 and you're a huge fan of something, the thing that you're going to be a fan of when you're 18 a lot of times changes like really rapidly. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, with me, the stuff I'm into now, a lot of the fans that like me a long time ago, they're not fans of me anymore.
It doesn't make sense to them.
Yeah,
now,
they're not. They don't like the tattoos and me rapping and me, they like the dance moves and the pretty face and me like, singing to the cameras. They like that shit, So it's like they're not even interested in what I'm doing no more,
Right. Has that been like a weird thing to navigate, creating new fans and sort of wanting to keep a certain percentage of your fans happy? And
it's not about keeping my fans happy. It's like, of course I want, I just want everybody to be happy, you don't have to necessarily be a fan. But it's very awkward for me because over there I'm like considered American. I'm considered like too hip hop, right? Or like too edgy or whatever. So like my music, I have some hits and stuff. I have a couple platinum singles, but every song I make is not like a huge hit out there.
Mm.
And then the over here, everybody considers me K-pop. But when you think of K-pop, you think of people like BTS. But I'm very different than BTS. So it's kind of like they kind of sleep on me, low-key.
It's more like you have a BTS past.
Yeah, but
the group you're in was like closer to what they're
definitely
doing, right?
But when they think of, like, they're like, oh, yeah, he's Korean. When they think Korean, they think of K-pop. So they think I'm going to be, like, my music is going to be like BTS or that like, they kind of put me in the same category. So they kind of sleep on my bars or they sleep on my music or whatever it may be. And so it's I'm in like an awkward space, but I'm like the only one in this space. So whatever, it's a lot of pressure, but it's also very, if I do something great, it's very good for my legacy. I think it's going to be dope.
It's been a pretty crazy 10 years and really even like a crazy like past year for like Asian representation and rap and stuff. That's crazy because you've seen the whole thing and you've been like breaking down boundaries, but you weren't necessarily, you feel like you don't necessarily get the credit for it because you've been in the game so long?
So there are a lot of people that give me credit. There are a lot of people that don't, just because, I am from the K-pop background, most of the time, because I show love to everybody. I try to put a lot of people on, I try to elevate everybody, uplift everybody. So, I don't get a lot of hate, no. But, some people might sleep on, like over here, like, okay, let's say, like, I've been in the game for 10 years, right? I've done a lot of things, broken a lot of barriers that, someone over here might not necessarily know. So they just think of me as some K-pop dude. Mm. So when they interview me or when they meet me, they're like, all right, cool. you know.
We know everything we need to know about you.
Yeah, they're like, yeah. They like, they just judge me before that they even know what I'm about. Like, all right, J Park, all right, cool. But like, I don't really know you, bro. Like,
it is crazy though, because okay, picture yourself when you were a kid, when you were 16, and the way that you would have thought about yourself and about your relationship with your own Korean-ness versus like a kid in the same exact position now. It's like a kid now, I think it's like a much better scenario in the sense that he would definitely feel more. Like, you would not think that being a rapper was as insane of an idea now if you were that same age, you know? And that's really, like, a big deal for society as a whole, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah, there's, you know, back then, a Korean rapper? Nah. Not at all. But now, it's kind of like, yeah, anything is possible. You see Rich Brian, Indonesian, small Indonesian kid pop off. You see there's people like Stupid Young.
Stupid Young. I was going to ask you if you knew about him.
Yeah, we just shot a video yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, we just shot a video yesterday. Man.
Wow, I love him. He's great.
He's fucking talented.
Super talented, super cool dude. And I made a video called, you know, Inside the Asian Gangs of Long Beach or some shit with him. And it got 8 million views. Yeah. I was like, wow, people really want to know about what's going on with this world.
Because, you know, okay, let's say like in the gangster like street rap stuff, how many Asian people are there?
No.
None. Yeah. But, you know, he has a legitimate story, very authentic, and he has a talent to back it up. Mm. You know, that's why it's like so interesting. And he's very dope. We made like 3 more songs yesterday in the studio last night, and he like freestyles everything and it sounds so fucking good. And he drinks all the fucking Douce and Henny and he does it, but he doesn't slur his words. I'm like, "Damn, bro, you're talented."
He is 0% scared to get loaded.
For sure.
When I was with him, because he put me on the Henny Lady in Long Beach, where they have like their friend's mom who will come bring you Hennessy 5 o'clock in the morning. She'll come and sell it to you, so because all the stores are closed and shit. So I thought that was pretty unbelievable.
Okay, that's a dope hustle.
I mean, yeah, and if you're with him like in his hood too, it's crazy because it's like, you know, you would never, like, they were, like, reminding me. They're like, "Yo, we ain't, like, the type of Asian dudes who, like, you know, are all nerdy and smart and shit." I'm like, "Bro, you guys all got tattoos on your face and stuff. I know. Like, you don't have to convince me."
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. So, being from that position where you feel like sometimes people aren't taking your music serious enough, does that drive you to want to, like, collaborate with American artists and go harder as a rapper and everything?
It drives me to definitely go harder, make good music, make sure every you know, song I drop or whatever is on par, you know, and up to standard. And I did want to collaborate with a lot of American artists, but after I did, you know, I want to work with people that want to work with me. You know, I don't want to chase after big names. I don't want to chase after, you know, because there's a lot of ego and just like, I don't want to, you know, so I don't have time for all that. I just want to, you know, move on with my life and just, you know, just kill it basically. And so I've been working with just whoever wants to work. And then, basically whoever wants to work, basically. Yeah.
How'd you end up signing Roc Nation?
I had a tour with AOMG, one of my labels, and then one of the stops was New York. Uh-huh. And then so someone from Tidal, Jason from Tidal, came through and just saw us perform. And he was like, "Yo, it's dope. We have to work with you somehow." Introduced us to Mr. Law over there and Shaka. And I guess they made it happen. And yeah, and it's been cool all the way.
Is that your first time having like major U.S. representation?
Yeah, first time.
Because I feel like that could open doors for what you're trying to accomplish on like a much bigger level.
Oh, of course. And you know, what better place to be at than Roc Nation, right? Right. And so, what was the question? Sorry, I'm blanking out.
Just like the doors that must have opened for you in terms
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, because I'm the first Asian guy to sign to Roc Nation, right?
Right.
And so it kind of like, I was very appreciative because it's like, okay, all the years of work I put in, even though I'm not the biggest Korean artist and a lot of people are getting more notoriety than me, still, like, you know, I got, you know, recognition from Roc Nation and Hov. And so I was like, that in itself was like very fulfilling and just like an honor. Like, "Yo, you've been doing this shit right, Jay. Shit, all right. Thank God."
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you got planned for the rest of the year in terms of things you're trying to accomplish and everything?
You know, we continue doing the AOMG thing, higher music thing. I got a lot of Seattle artists. Avatar Dog was in the building. Dolce Drago's in the building.
Oh, okay.
You know, we try to get Seattle shit popping too, because, you know, a lot of people sleep on Seattle as well in terms of hip hop. Mm. When you think of hip hop, Seattle, who do you think of?
Nirvana.
That's not hip hop though.
No, when I think of Seattle, I think of my boy Glenn, and they have a group called I'll Fight You.
Oh, I think
they're dope. They're like real underground, but I interviewed them a while back, and they're super cool. Should definitely check that out.
Okay.
Oh, Tacoma? Yeah. I also think of Macklemore.
Right? And so, yeah, but there's a lot of other different sides of Seattle hip-hop, and there's a lot of dope artists, but there's, like, not a lot of industry over there, and people don't get a lot of looks. Mm. Try to get that shit popping. I got, like, a project dropping with a lot of Seattle artists on there. It's called The Road Less Traveled. Mm. That's strictly rap. All rap.
I just realized you got the Seattle neck tattoo, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is that thing called, actually?
It's like a compass. It's just a compass. Oh, but okay. It's like a playoff of like the Mariners logo.
Right, the Mariners. Yeah. There you go. I have like really bad sports knowledge that stopped in like fourth grade. So I recognized the logo, but couldn't remember the name.
Yeah.
Damn, that's crazy. All right. So any thanks you want to send out or anything for general? This is really interesting, man.
Yeah, thank you to you.
No, I appreciate
thank
that.
You, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, man.
Yeah, I'm the first guy from overseas on your podcast.
That might be true for all nations.
Damn.
Not just Asia.
This is historic.
Somebody might correct me and tell me that after doing 500 podcasts, I finally got somebody who's not from America. No, there's got to be other ones too.
Canada. But.
Oh, no, Canada for sure, yeah.
No
yeah.
European artists? No, like London? No, what about Latino artists? No.
Not like from Higher outside Brothers? America. No, we haven't done it.
Wow.
So many times over the years, I thought that I was going to do different interviews with different Asian rappers or somebody from London, blah, blah, blah. It's just never, it doesn't seem like it really happens. Although I'm sure there's people I'm forgetting. And even my list of Canadians is pretty short.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's an honor. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. We're breaking down boundaries. Yes, little did I know I was such a bigot that I was only interviewing Americans this whole time. Oh, shit. Oh, the Korean documentary that we have dropping soon that Cam Girl filmed with you while out in
but
Korea.
The funny
right?
thing is, I'm not even in it.
Oh, you're not.
But people on my label are in it. So AOMG, we got Wonje. Wonje's in it, right? Wonje and Loco. Wonje, Loco, and Gray is in it.
Okay.
And yeah, I think they got a whole bunch of other Korean artists and stuff like that.
She's
yeah.
being very secretive about the editing portion, so I haven't necessarily seen that much of it yet. But
when is it coming out?
I do not know. That was really up to her. ASAP. She says.
Look out for
that's
the.
That's a good answer.
What's it called?
No Jumper Korean that's, documentary
really?
V1. I mean, I think that's our way of saying that the title is probably still up in the air.
Okay. Got it. Title's tentative.
Oh, amazing. Hey, yeah, it was dope meeting you, man.
It's likewise, man.
Appreciate you. And everybody, let us know if you fuck with Jay down in the comments.
Hey.
Yeah, this has been No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes.
Hey.
Peace. I'm